All right, well, welcome to your final case for our March panel, which would normally be hearing in Norfolk or in Lincoln, but due to circumstances, we continue to hold our oral arguments via WebEx, so we appreciate your flexibility and willingness to join us on this format. I am pleased to be joined by Judge Rico Bishop from Lincoln and Judge Larry Walsh from Plattsmouth. We have extended time periods for this case. The appellant is allotted 13 minutes, and then each of the appellees will have 8 minutes. Following the second appellee's 8 minutes, the appellant may use whatever remaining rebuttal time is available. All right, and with that, we will go ahead and get started. Mr. Mossman, if you're ready to proceed.
I am, Your Honor. May it please the court and counsel, Steve Mossman and Jacob Garbison from Mattson Ricketts Law Firm, representing the appellant, Bush Island, Inc. And I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. This matter comes before the court as an appeal from a decree of the District Court of Merritt County. Bush Island, while a Nebraska corporation, is more of a social and recreational club, formed some 60 years ago by 5 members and controlled largely by their descendants in the Platte River, on island, the Platte River. The corporation purchased Bush Island by deed in 1961, conveying some 1,600 acres, including accretion, and has maintained the property ever since as families for hunting, fishing, and recreation. At issue in this case is the deeded island property and accretions in the Platte River at the border of Merritt and Hamilton counties. Bush Island holds title, deeded title to a portion of island number 5 in section 11 and island number 6 in sections 11, 14, and 15 in Merritt County. We've assigned a number of errors, but we wanted to focus on two this morning. One, the district court finding the existence of a boundary fence by mutual acquiescence and recognition on the island property. And two, the court limiting Bush Island's potential accretion ground by a channel which did not contain the thread of the stream. As the court knows, this is a entered in equity, so your review is the findings of fact and conclusions of law are de novo, independently of the trial court's consideration.
So, Mr. Mossman, I need to ask a very elementary question right at the beginning. Your complaint was for an action to quiet title, and the district court denied you any relief and dismiss that complaint, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. It then enjoined you from certain areas of certain lands and set the boundaries for lands owned by the defendants and the cross defendants. But it didn't establish anything for Bush Island. Is that correct?
Your Honor, that's correct. That's the way we would view that the judge's decree in this case.
Go ahead.
And Exhibit 241 was the exhibit that the court used between the defendants and Bush Island. And we note a lot of things about Exhibit 241. It was never advanced as the boundary in this case by the defendants until we'd already completed 4 days of trial. There was a motion to amend the complaint that added a counterclaim, in our opinion, for the first time, and that included Exhibit 241. But by that time, the person that had the surveyor who had made that survey had already testified. Bush Island had already rested their case, and we really didn't have any opportunity to really vet the survey that the court ended up adopting, Your Honor.
So when the court set the boundaries for the defendants and the cross defendants, what effect does that? I mean, is it quieting title? Is it declaring ownership in those lands to those parties?
I believe that the court intended to convey ownership of the land to those parties. That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I'd like to start first with the mutual acquiescence argument. And I've covered a little bit of that, but at some point, Mr. Garbison's going to project here. This is the Government Land Office Survey, or GLO, and that shows the islands at issue. And this was done by the Government Land Office back in the mid-19th century. And then over time, through the process broadly known as accretion and reliction, the waters of the Platteway gave way to additional lands, turning a wide stretch of river into what's commonly known as a braided river. And that's Exhibit 154 is an aerial photo that represents that. Now, at some point, there was a fence that was built on the island land in question. We're going to go to Exhibit number 186. The district court recognized this fence as a boundary by mutual acquiescence between Bush Island and its upland neighbors. And it relied primarily on what it called the 1938 accretion survey. And the accretion survey is in black. Mr. Garbison is tracing that with his pointer. And the stated purpose of this survey was to run accretion lines. And there wasn't any evidence that it was ever intended to provide a permanent boundary between the properties. And what's more, there's only a small part of any fence line that actually follows the accretion survey. That's that just in that little area right there. It doesn't extend to the east for any significant area, and it certainly doesn't extend to what the court ended up finding was a western boundary. But in order for the court to find that there was mutual acquiescence, there needs to be mutuality. Every member of Bush Island that testified at the trial, they had never testified that they'd never considered the fence to be a boundary. Bush Island president Pat Bell testified that in 1971, his father, one of the original five that I talked about, took him across the fence on his first hunting trip to the island. Whenever they found any tree stands or deer stands or anything, they contacted authorities and reported those. John Cates was a member of Bush Island who sadly died before trial, but we had his testimony preserved via deposition. He testified that all the founding members believed that they had purchased the entire island, which included some 1,600 acres with accretion that was included on the deed. And for his part, he always believed that the north channel of the Platte was the northern boundary, and we'll get to that argument in a second. His son, Les Cates, also testified at trial. And he testified that he's been visiting islands since about 6 years old, and that he never considered any fence to be a boundary, and that he's constructed deer stands and so forth. And those are three of the stands that he has shown there conducted in the black dots. So the district court, as I discussed earlier with Judge Reedman, ultimately granted relief with what it described as a boundary survey. But again, that survey was the defendant's counsel asked the defendants about it, but Mr. Stevens, who prepared that, was never asked about that. And the record in the evidence in the record does not tie Exhibit 241 into any fence line. Mr. Stevens was not ever asked specifically about Exhibit 241. There's another version of it in evidence as Exhibit 165, and he wasn't asked about that either. So we don't believe that the evidence before the court was sufficient to either find mutuality in terms of acquiescence or to find that Exhibit 241 accurately represented the fence, any fence as a boundary. So I'd like to go on to the accretion claim. And the decree of the court found that it was clear that Bush Island had added accretion to the area of its property, the deeded property, but found that it failed to establish the boundaries of the accretion claim because it did not establish what it called, quote, the high watermark. The high watermark that the judge district court used is unprecedented in Nebraska law. Instead, the boundary between a deeded island and its upland neighbors is located at the thread of the stream, and that's been defined by the Supreme Court and this court for 100 years as where the last little bit of water flowing could be found. A case decided by this court, Obliger, in 2011, talked about the fact that none of the Nebraska cases have a precise meets and bounds legal description of a location because it's difficult to find where the last bit of water is flowing can be found until it actually happens. And that's what makes this case unique. We presented to the district court evidence as to where the last bit of water was flowing and that is in the north channel and not in this claimed middle channel that the district court's decree talks about.
Did anyone dispute that the thread was in the north channel?
They did not, Your Honor. In fact, the expert witness called on behalf of the defendants, or excuse me, the cross defendants, Dr. Musseter, said he agreed that the thread was in the north channel. The secondary thread was in the south channel, and with a deeded island, you actually have to establish both threads to determine where the boundaries are. Dr. Musseter testified that in an ideal world, we would go out there as the river's running up, and it would be obvious even to a layperson where the thread of the river is. And here we have, again, a survey of where the river dried up. That was introduced in evidence as exhibit number 202. What the district court did in using Dr. Musseter's testimony about the high water mark, which again we don't find used in any of the riparian case law, is divorced the Bush Island property from the water. The threat of the stream, Hart versus Orr is a case that says the right of access in the end, a determinative factor in all systems of water law. And so where the water ends is where the boundary has to be, because that gives landowners on each side access to water. And in the case at issue, that was, as the surveyors and Dr. Musseter agreed, that was in the north channel. And any deprivation of access to water would violate longstanding precedent. And in fact, if the court looks, there was a case decided, Babel versus Schmidt, in 2009, and that was immediately downstream from here. And the parties in that case also recognized that the thread of the stream was in the north channel. We believe that that you simply cannot cut off a claim based upon anything except that the thread of the stream has got to be the claim, because that's where the last trickle of water is, and that's, and access to that water is the key to the riparian system.
Mr. Mossman, can you talk a little bit about the middle stream that everyone is talking about? It's my understanding that your position is it did not persist over time, contrary to the district court's finding. Is that correct?
Well, we don't, it did not persist over time in terms of, it certainly wasn't there. This is again the GLO, which is exhibit number 101. There's no middle channel represented on exhibit number 101. So we don't believe it existed historically, because it's not part of the Government Land Office survey.
But the GLO survey is limited to those islands that were 5 acres or greater, correct?
That's my understanding, is that that's what they surveyed, correct?
Okay. I believe the expert testimony, however, was that the middle channel did persist during all relevant times.
And again, our position would be that if it's not the last channel that is carrying water, if it's not the thread of the stream, it's irrelevant how long it has existed. And we believe that that's consistent with case law. I think the Winkle case, there's a map that shows a small island with a channel to the north of it and then a larger island. And the court in Winkle held that since the thread of the river was in the north or main channel of the Platte River in that case, that ground belonged to the owner of the island. And we don't think that a thread can be anywhere except where the actual water is running. There's also a case, McBride versus Whitaker, that held that the plat of a government survey, after having been approved by the land department, is in an action between individuals conclusive. And so we do take a lot of credence in the GLO in this case, but more importantly in the fact that you can't separate flowing water from a landowner in a riparian setting.
If we were to agree that the middle channel did exist way back when, but it just doesn't appear that way because the islands that surrounded it were smaller than 5 acres and therefore aren't shown on Exhibit 101. What about the case law that says when you're talking about an island, you look at the thread of each surrounding channel?
Well, and we believe that that case law can only, that the case law says when it uses the term channel, it's the channel that contains the thread. And because Monument Farm versus Daggett is a braided river case from 1994 from this court, where the thread of the stream is the boundary between estates and that stream has two channels, the thread of the main channel is the boundary between the estates. So just because the word channel has been used, when you're talking about the boundaries, that channel by definition has to be the channel that has a thread in it. And we don't believe there's any evidence, and certainly Dr. Musser did not believe that the thread was in the middle channel.
And does that interpretation require us to read out the word surrounding channel? I'm particularly interested in that Hyder versus Krauts case. And I think that's where that proposition of law comes from.
Well, in Hyder, they stated it actually rather explicitly, Judge Friedman. In Hyder, they said the thread or center of a channel, as that term is used above, and I'll get to that in a second, Your Honor. Give me a second. I want to get this exact. Must be the line which gives owners on either side access to the water, whatever its stage may be. So they do use the term channel, but then they go on to describe channel as, the term is employed as the line that would give water, give owners on either side access to the water.
I'd like a follow-up question to that if I could, Mr. Mossman. So as I understand this then, assuming there is a middle channel and a north channel, under these circumstances, based on the court's finding, would it be fair to say that nobody would have rights or ownership interest in the land between the middle channel and north channel under the judge's ruling?
I'm not sure how to answer that, Judge, because I think that if that's the case, then the thread is in the north channel and that accretes to the Bush Island property. So I think I don't believe that that's a possible scenario, Judge, because I do think that means that the Bush Island land goes to the north channel.
Yeah, so under your theory, that's an impossibility. You can't have the bed owned by nobody. You have to find the thread, and on either side, it extends the ownership interest on either side of that thread. You couldn't have a scenario where you have two channels within one stream or river and nobody owns it in between, even though both parties on either side have rights to water, navigable rights.
That's correct. Where an island is distinct, and the case law is clear on that, the island has a primary and a secondary thread. So in this case, everybody's in agreement, including Dr. Musser, that the secondary thread is in the south channel and that the primary thread is in the north channel. So that defines then the accretion claim that goes to Bush Island.
Well, I understand that's a replacement of the island, but the uniqueness of this is there's a third channel, right? There's a channel, if you assume that there was this middle channel, now we have a third channel in the middle. And the question then becomes, Does the land rights flow all the way to the middle channel or bypass the middle channel, go all the way to the north channel because it's deeper? Isn't that the issue?
Yeah, and we believe that the case law is clear that, and again, Monument Farms goes for that in terms of deciding which channel is the boundary. The channel is the boundary which contains the thread. And we believe that the case law is clear on that point. I am gone way over my time.
All right, Jody, can you tell us how far over we took, Mr. Mossman? I didn't.
I'm not sure she heard.
Jody, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Judge Reedman. Can you hear me?
I can now. Can you tell us how far over we took, Mr. Mossman?
I'm sorry. Yes, 5 minutes and 32 seconds.
All right. Will you, so each of the appellees was to have 8 minutes. Can you add 2 minutes to each of their time, giving them each 10?
Yes, Your Honor.
No promises that we won't go over that. All right, and which appellee is planning on going next? Mr. Campbell, Mr. Dretske?
Take your screen off.
Mr. Campbell will be going next.
Okay, perfect. All right, we are ready to proceed when you are.
You appear to be muted.
Okay, we'll try this. Can you hear me?
We can hear you now, correct.
Okay, thank you. I'm Charles Campbell. I represent the Cross defendants who own land on the south side of the Platte River. That's an issue in this case. The time I have available, I'd like to address the main issues on this appeal that impact our clients, the Cross defendants. First discussing Bush Island's accretion claim, and then I'll discuss the accretion claim of the Cross defendants. As your questions highlight, it's important to understand the riparian law that applies to the claims presented by property owners on each side of the river and also to Bush Island. There are two principles that are controlling. The first principle or rule is the rule that defines the boundary of an island. The applicable surveyor's instructions and guidelines establish that the boundaries to an island in a river are formed by the river channels surrounding the island that is below the ordinary high water mark. That was explained by Dr. Musseter in his trial testimony and is also set out in pages 10 and 11 of his report that was received as Exhibit 326. It's also provided for in the applicable surveyor's instructions that provide the guidelines for determination of channels that are contained in Exhibits 367 and 370. Mr. Mossman made the comment that in no case has the Supreme Court ever recognized the high water mark. In fact, the Supreme Court has recognized this back into the 1800s. The first case, I believe, that the court discussed the high water mark of a channel in a river was a case of Lammers versus Nissen at 4 Nebraska 245. The court again discussed high water mark in channels in the case of Wiggenhorn versus Counts 23 Nebraska 690, an 1888 decision. As Dr. Musseter explained in his detailed analysis of the river stretch that is an issue, the middle channel forms the border of the Bush Island accretion ground to the north, and the south channel borders that ground on the south.
Mr. Campbell, can you address Judge Welch's question to Mr. Mossman regarding then what does that do with regard to, you know, the space between the middle channel and the north channel?
Well, that goes to the threat of the river, which is the north channel, and I will address that. Okay. That goes to the second principle, which applies to the determination of the threat of the river, and I will address that. The accretion ground of Bush Island includes original islands 5 and 6 that were patented by the GLO in 1866. Those have merged together, and it also includes all land that has become attached to those islands. As Dr. Musseter and Tom Riley, the defendant's expert, testified, those channels are established channels. They are depicted in all of the aerial photographs going back to 1838 to the present time. And virtually all of the witnesses testified that the middle channel is an established channel, including Bush Island's president, Pat Bell, who acknowledged that the middle channel is an established channel that borders Bush Island on the north.
Does it matter that the GLO survey doesn't include a middle channel?
No, it does not, because that survey does not show the braided channels in the river that have developed over time. And we know that at least since 1938, as testified to by Dr. Musser, likely long before that, this middle channel has been in existence. Lay witnesses confirm that. The case law, likewise, going back to at least 1936 in the case of Higgins versus Adelson, establishes that the ownership of an island extends to the center or thread of each channel that surrounds the island. The district court determined the boundary of Bush Island consists of deeded islands 5 and 6 and all accretion ground attached to them, and that island is bordered by the middle and south channels. Now, the second rule that applies to Bush Island's accretion claim is the rule that a deeded island in a river has the same riparian rights as owners of shoreland possess on opposite sides of the river. Mr. Mossman is correct. That is the riparian rule that applies to deeded islands, just as it applies to owners of shoreland. As the district court determined, the evidence was clear that the North Channel is the thread of the river. Now, this means that Bush Island is entitled to make a claim to accretion of the unowned riverbed located between its deeded island property and the land extending north to the north of the middle channel to the North Channel. And that again is because the rule in Nebraska is that a riparian owner acquires by accretion all unowned land in the river extending from the landowner's property to the thread of the river. The reason for that is so that landowners on each side of the thread of the river will have equal access to the river thread.
And that would allow Bush Island to claim land skipping over the middle channel?
It would.
North of it?
Okay. Yes. Now, unfortunately, there is some confusion in the record regarding the riparian rights of a deeded island that I believe was caused by my questioning of Dr. Musseter at trial and the argument presented in my brief, which does not clearly distinguish between the Bush Island accretion ground, which is the ground located between the middle and south channels, and the ground that it may claim as accretion, which is that additional ground located between the middle and north channels. We acknowledge, as I said, that Bush Island may present a claim for accretion of that ground, and Dr. Musseter, in fact, has stated this. In his report, in Exhibit 326, he states on page 14 that the limit of Bush Island's accretion claim is defined by the upstream boundary line that he has depicted in what was received as Exhibit 366. And if we can pull up Exhibit 366, I can illustrate this a little better, I think. Dave, are you able to do that?
Yes, one second there.
Okay. Well, in the meantime, maybe I can, well, I don't know that this is going to, that's not going to come across very well if I hold it up. We tried to work this out ahead. I thought we had it worked out, but unfortunately, it is not coming up. Are you able to access Dr. Musseter's diagram, which is 366, yourselves?
Yes.
Okay. Well, if you can do that in this, well, maybe there it is. Okay. Now, if we can enlarge that, I will try and enlarge that if possible. There we go. All right. Good. Okay, if we go to the point that he has marked as the upstream tip of accretion, what Dr. Musseter is showing is the intersection of the middle channel and the south channels, which form the upstream boundary of Bush Island's accretion ground. This includes lots 5 and 6 that have become merged, and the boundaries of that island, which are formed by the two surrounding established channels. Now, that is the accretion ground. The accretion claim that Bush Island presents, that Dr. Musseter has outlined in Exhibit 366, is represented by this perpendicular line, perpendicular blue line, that runs from the south channel to the north channel. And as Dr. Musseter defines that as the boundary line of the Bush Island accretion claim, that would show that the land north of the middle channel, between the middle channel and the north channel, is that area that Bush Island may make a claim for accretion to. Now, that would be subject to any claims by the north side property owners for title that they are claiming, which we have no position on. The confusion over the distinction between Bush Island's accretion ground, which consists of that land between the middle and south channels, and its claim for accretion, which includes land north of the middle channel, downstream of this upstream tip, extending up to the north channel. That was reflected by, unfortunately, by the district court's order, which limited Bush Island's accretion claim to the middle channel. We agree with Bush Island that that statement in the district court order is incorrect, that Bush Island is entitled to present a claim for accretion extending from the boundary of its island, which is marked by that upstream tip, to the north channel. And to the extent that the court limited its claim, we agree that that is incorrect.
Okay.
I'd next like to address the accretion claims of the cross defendants.
Well, Mr. Campbell, you're out of time.
Oh.
And since we have already added additional time to your 8 minutes, I'm going to move on to the appellee's argument for the defendants in this case.
All right. Well, I would ask that you reference my brief regarding the claims.
We will.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Your Honors, I apologize for the delay. I'm challenged by technology, admittedly.
Aren't we all?
Exactly. As you know, I'm David Jaretsky of Blinken and Wilmoth Jaretsky, and I represent the defendants in this case. The defendants include multiple parties, and all of which are the Northside property owners. And I certainly intend to address several of the court's questions here. I'm certainly impressed by the court's preparation for this. I think I'll start, however, with distinguishing Mr. Campbell's statements from a position that I think the court is at least struggling with, and admittedly, I did as well. And I think it starts with this very simple premise. If you go to Exhibit 101, which was the GLO that Mr. Mossman initially displayed before the court, as exhibited in that, and the discussion here is Bush Island exists at that. There were two islands shown on that exhibit. Exhibits 5 and 6, 7 has been merged in the southern boundary. My point being, while it's true in this instance that Bush Island, Mr. Uriah Bush originally, was the owner of those two islands, obviously that wouldn't have to be the case. And inherently, as the court has asked in whether it come from the Higgins case or the Carter case and others, that channel between those two islands would necessarily have to be the boundary. So it begs the question as to what is that channel? And I think it's also worth pointing out, as we'll get in further into the argument, and for this reason, I disagree with Mr. Campbell on some of his statements, that when you look to the Higgins case, which happens to be a Merrick County case, from 1936. So a neighboring property, at about the same time or shortly after Mr. Parsons did the survey work, quote, at the request of Mr. Uriah Bush and Mr. Henry Cordham, we don't know, and there's no evidence to tell us one way or the other. Was Mr. Uriah Bush aware of the Merrick County case that was certainly very near their property? We don't know. However, it would stand to reason that they did know. It would stand to reason that they created an accretion survey, again, upon their request, upon sworn oath, for the very reason that they wanted to avoid the dispute that Higgins and Adelson presented to this Nebraska Supreme Court. And in that case, as again, this court is well aware, it identifies the boundary of island number one in that case as the surrounding channel. So we stand with the struggle of what does that surrounding channel mean? And
can I interrupt you for 1 second thing? I just need to understand that the defendants on the north take the position that their ownership interest then extends to the middle channel.
No, Judge Welsh, that's not correct. However, it could be correct. And I'll quickly move into why that's not correct. And it's not correct, again, because of Exhibits 210, 211, which are the agreement between these parties. I must also take issue with two others' prior statements. Note, however, the court asked about the Heider-Krauts case, which again, I would suggest is one of the most important cases in this dispute, not cited by the plaintiffs, most interestingly, in their brief. And I would suggest that it is one of the most critical cases for your consideration review. I would also dispute any suggestion that there was no dispute as to where the last thread ran. In fact, the record is complete with many, many pictures that absolutely undermine the evidence presented by the plaintiffs as to where that thread of the stream was located. Mr. Brad Lockovitz testified through Exhibit 269, through numerous photographs and lengthy testimony, was subjected to exhausting cross-examination, that Mr. Mossman's experts, or not experts, laypersons, excuse me, were wrong. They found the wrong channel. You could argue it's still located within the north channel, so there's maybe some argument that Mr. Mossman didn't misrepresent that. But nonetheless, they found the wrong channel. They found there was certainly evidence of water standing and running days from when they suggested that they were at the property. But I'm going to attempt to move into sharing some pictures, and I think hopefully making a little more sense out of this. And it's
so again, while you do that, there is a question. While you do that, there's a question on my mind. Yes. that I want to make sure that you answer before time has expired. And that is
absolutely
because you represent the defendants on the north side, and we're talking about the island here and that land in between and trying to figure out that boundary line. I'm interested in this issue of when we have two streams present, like there are two channels here. And particularly I want you to comment on Monument Farm's statement that when the thread of the stream is the boundary between estates and the stream has two channels, the thread of the main channel is the boundary between the two estates. Do you agree with that statement?
I do not. I think several cases again suggest that it's the surrounding channel. And it could be a correct statement if the surrounding channel includes the thread of the stream. But to the extent the thread of the stream is not contained within that surrounding channel, then I would not disagree. I would disagree with that statement. But it's
so. Do you also disagree then with Mr. Campbell's statement that Bush Island
could claim founding?
I tried to write this note. This as he was talking.
Yeah.
That they could claim as accretion land, land to the north of the channel, skipping over the middle channel.
Yes, and Judge Reedman, that's exactly what Exhibit 241 does. When you look to Exhibit 241, you'll see depicted on 241, what you see cutting through the middle of Bush Island, if you will. This area is that very middle channel.
Okay.
As you can see, when again, what I suggest the court found correctly through Exhibit 241, this meets and bounds description provided from, by the way, plaintiff's own surveyor, and I'll establish that momentarily. But this line is the channel along the fence line, which happens to be incorporated, again, arguably within the North Channel, but along the small channel that, again, the parties had recognized and mutually agreed upon from 1939 to the present. It was a fence line that neither party crossed. And again, I think it was an access point, arguably for watering cattle, but again, that is the agreement. So this area in between is, under the context of what Exhibit 241 established and what was proven by the defendants, that does belong to Bush Island.
Does it belong to them by way of accretion?
Belongs to them as a result of acquiescence.
I think
we could argue that it would have been inconsistent for me to have argued that a fence line established their boundary. But since I can get a windfall here, I'll take down to that middle stream. So early on in this case, we had to decide that that was not the position we would take, and we never did take. So I think the case law is inconsistent, frankly, on that point. But as a result of the fence line, I don't need to address that question.
I see.
I have a question. Do you have Exhibit 348 on there that you would be able to pull it up?
I don't, Your Honor.
You don't? Okay. Never mind then.
But let me just jump quickly to a couple that I think will be instructive. So first of all, Exhibit 186, which Mr. Mossman already pulled up. Again, it's critical to point out, again, very inconsistent with what he represented to you. Again, we see in the legend there, old fence line. It's pink. And then as we reduce that image, and so their surveyor found that old fence line. And then as you see the blue line, which is the same survey line, it's overlapping the pink line. It's one and the same line. So again, the evidence came from the plaintiff as to the establishment of that fence line. I apologize that they don't like it, but that's their own surveyor's expertise. I think this exhibit, an aerial photograph from 1938, which is the court asked about the GLO. The GLO, of course, is just a cadastral map that was drawn by surveyors. Whether that was really representative of the river at that time, who knows? This is the most dated photo that can be found. The dotted line that I'm showing to the court here, that is Oscar Parsons' survey. And noteworthy as I go back for a moment here, Mr. Parsons, as you look to the eastern side, Mr. Mossman mentioned Babel Schmidt, this line on the east side of Bush Island, that very straight line that intersects an island, Mr. Parsons is also the same county surveyor at almost the exact same time that did that survey, which Bush Island does not dispute and their surveyors did not dispute, and they incorporated obviously into their own survey. The same time he did this shape over here. So remarkably inconsistent. But back to the exhibits, we see that this is the Parsons survey. You see a very strong suggestion of this middle channel bordering Bush Island. I'll just go through quickly because the time frame is important here. 1953, this shows again, very strong evidence. This area in the middle here, this area, that is Bush Island. Again, it was bounded by this middle channel. In 1953, did the threat of the stream exist in that channel? Frankly, we'll never know. But you'll see this little channel here, and it'll become much more evident in the next photo.
Actually, Mr. Dretzky, we are going to, your time has expired.
Okay. If I could just finish that sentence, 1973 photo, you
sure.
See the extension of that small channel. That's where the defendants found and the plaintiffs found the fence line and what was purported to be the fence. So that's consistent with Exhibit 241. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. The appellant had used up all of his time. I want to thank counsel, particularly for using the technology and being able to present these maps and charts and pictures to us, because as you know, reading through this here, that there, it was really hard for us to decipher. So I truly, truly appreciate counsel's efforts in actually letting us visualize what you are talking about as we read through this. So with that being said, the case is submitted. Counsel is excused. And again, thank you. Thanks for your technology and thanks for your willingness to participate via WebEx.
Thank you, everybody.
Yep. And that concludes our March panel for the Court of Appeals. Thank you.